This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
While this convoy was, you know, something that he welcomed very much and provided a glimpse of hope, but it's really a drop in the ocean if you compare it to the size of the need inside Gaza.
That was World Food Program Middle East official Abir Itfa, relieved on the first convoy, making it through to Gaza. Details coming up also. The European Union took a legal step towards imposing sanctions on Niger's new military rulers. And the World Health Organization reports progress in preventing and responding to cases of sexual misconduct by its staff. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The World Food Program has welcomed the opening of the border crossing between Egypt and Gaza. That has allowed the first convoy of trucks to bring in urgently needed food, water, and other supplies provided by the Egyptian Red Crescent and United Nations for Palestinians who have been desperate for help. Abir Itfa, spokesperson for the World Food Program in the Middle East, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam the first convoy was carrying 60 metric tons of WFP emergency food.
It was the first convoy that went into Gaza since the beginning of the conflict. That was a convoy of 20 trucks. WFP had around 3 trucks out of this convoy. And it was like loaded with food commodities, mainly ready-to-eat food, type of canned food, and some, you know, mixed commodities, food commodities that are supposed to be distributed in shelters. That food is around enough for 200,000 people for just one day. So while this convoy was, you know, something that he welcomed very much and provided a glimpse of hope, but it's really a drop in the ocean if you compare it to the size of the need inside Gaza.
And so we're talking just food, right? You're not sending anything else because you're not allowed to?
No, the convoys are carrying, you know, humanitarian supplies, medical, just different things, medical assistance. As for WFP, the World Program, we're concerned, of course, on the food, our supplies, because that went into this convoy. This convoy is organized by the Egyptian Red Crescent, and different things and different partners have loaded supplies on this convoy. So we did have like 3 trucks in the convoy.
Did it go smoothly? Were there any problems getting that first convoy in?
You know, for a first convoy, of course, things were, a bit challenging. I think it was like they had to, this was the passenger border crossing point, and it wasn't really ready to take on heavy loads of trucks. So they were, you know, beefing up the capacity on the other end in terms of fixing the roads to make sure it can carry on these kinds of trucks. So there were challenges, and that's why this was a reason why things got late for a couple of days since the announcement that was made by President Biden that humanitarian supplies will go into Gaza. And I think that still, now that this is the third day, more supplies are getting in. It's getting in, I would say, slowly with small quantities because everybody is ironing out the process, including the inspection of these trucks by the Israeli side.
When do you expect more trucks to get through? Soon?
There was, like, Saturday, was the first convoy. Yesterday, there was another convoy of 14 more trucks. Today, there is also another convoy. So I think it's happening on a daily basis. But again, this is very small quantity that's getting into Gaza. If you look at the situation before this conflict, Gaza was receiving on a daily basis 450 trucks coming from the Egyptian side for commercial purpose, mainly food supplies and all kinds of, you know, day-to-day, you know, supplies. So looking at, 14 trucks, that's really a drop in the ocean.
That was Abir Itfah, spokesperson for the World Food Program in the Middle East. She was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam from Cairo, Egypt. Israel has intensified attacks on northern Gaza and has warned anyone who stayed risked being considered as an accomplice of Hamas. The Israeli Defense Forces said it had attacked over 320 targets in Gaza in the last 24 hours, including Hamas militants' infrastructure and military equipment. Also, the families of 222 confirmed hostages were notified that their loved ones were being held captive in the Gaza Strip. Gaza authorities today said more than 5,000 people have died in the bombardment, which began after Hamas militants attacked several Israeli communities on October 7th and killed more than 1,400 people. As we just reported, more aid trucks are entering Gaza from Egypt today, but the number remains far below the more than 400 trucks a day that normally crossed into the Palestinian territory. For an update on the situation, I spoke earlier with VOA's Linda Gradstein.
Sure. Well, I'm in Jerusalem, and there is some possibly breaking news, and I want to make sure that I do not have this confirmed, but there are reports of a deal that Qatar and the United States are trying to broker a deal for the release of 50 hostages who have dual nationality, Americans, Brits, Canadians, etc., and that's why Israel is holding off on its ground invasion, hoping to get these 50 hostages of the, as you said earlier, 222 out. Now, if that happens, that would, of course, be a very big deal. Two hostages, American citizens who don't actually live in Israel, a mother and daughter, were released over the weekend, but they were the first hostages to have been released. So if this deal goes through, apparently it is Qatar and the United States that is trying to mediate with Hamas.
Linda, here, the Israeli military has launched, limited raids into Gaza to hunt Hamas gunmen and search for hostages taken from southern Israel. But now we know that there are 222 confirmed hostages, and U.S. President Joe Biden reportedly urged Israel to delay ground attacks off the region to secure the release of more hostages. So is that one of the reasons maybe we're seeing some movement here with this 50 hostages you just mentioned with dual nationality?
A possibility. I mean, I think that, you know, the Israeli army is growing a little bit frustrated. For 2 weeks, they've been, sitting just outside Gaza, waiting to go in a ground operation. And apparently American pressure has sort of held that off somewhat. At the same time, as you said earlier, Israel continues its bombing raids, especially on northern Gaza. The Palestinian Health Ministry today said that close to 5,000 Palestinians have died in the Israeli bombing raids, including thousands of children.
And talk to us about the aid convoy that has entered Gaza from Egypt over the Rafah border crossing.
So there were two separate convoys, each with 20 trucks of food and water and medicine. There are fears really of a growing humanitarian crisis in Gaza. Even before the war started, 95% of the drinking water in Gaza was not drinkable. So there's a fear of the spread of disease. UN officials say that the aid trucks are a beginning, but don't come close to meeting the need. American officials say that they expect the pace of the aid to increase. Now, all of that aid is coming from the Egyptian border, from the Rafah border. Israel has said it will not let aid go through the northern border of the Strip as long as Hamas continues to hold hostages.
And the death toll, I'm sure it has gone up. Any numbers from the Israeli side as well as the Palestinian side?
Yes. So the Israeli side is 1,400. There are, you know, yesterday a soldier was killed on the border with Gaza. He actually was inside Gaza, apparently looking for the remains of Israelis. There are still hundreds of people who haven't been identified. But the official death total is 1,400 on the Israeli side and close to 5,000 on the Palestinian side.
And Israeli defense minister actually said Israel's attack on Gaza could last a month, two, or three. Talk to us about
that. Yes, he was talking about the ground invasion, the defense minister, Yoav Gallant. I mean, a ground invasion of Gaza is going to be extremely complicated and extremely painful for both sides. And that's one of the reasons that Israel is not in such a rush to do it, although probably will in the next, you know, few days, is that, you know, it's Gaza is extremely crowded, densely populated. Hamas gunmen are believed to be hiding underneath in tunnels and things like that. And Israel says that Hamas is using civilian infrastructure like hospitals as hiding places. But the Israeli defense minister said that Israel is committed to getting rid of Hamas, that it simply, you know, will not allow Hamas to exist with any kind of military power, which then leaves the question, you know, assuming then Israel has an extended war in Gaza, 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, whatever it is, what happens afterwards? And it doesn't seem like people have given a whole lot of thought to what happens after this war ends.
And lastly, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said yesterday that the U.S. expects the Israeli-Hamas war to escalate through involvement by proxies of Iran, and asserted that the Biden administration is prepared to respond if American personnel or armed forces become a target of any such hostilities.
Well, yes, you know, Israel, we've already seen in the past, you know, 10 days an increase in tensions on the border between Israel and Lebanon. Hezbollah, which is a proxy of Iran, it controls South Lebanon. And every day there's been exchanges of fire across that border. Every time that, you know, Israel, an Israeli military post is fired on, Israel fires back with artillery, with tank fire, or at cells, it says they're preparing to carry out attacks. Israel has evacuated about 25 communities from that area, fearing that Hezbollah could get involved. So far, it seems as if both Hezbollah and Israel are trying to be careful not to do anything that would drag the other side into a full-scale conflict. Hezbollah has at least 150,000 rockets that can hit all of Israel. So, you know, Hezbollah is a serious fighting force, and Israel doesn't really want to be fighting on two fronts at the same time, although it says it is prepared to do so. Last week, we had the Houthi rebels in Yemen launch two missiles at Eilat, the southern Israeli port city. The U.S. aircraft carrier shot down those missiles. But, you know, tensions are really running high on all kinds of fronts. And there is certainly concern that this war between Israel and Hamas could easily spill over.
VOA's Linda Grandstein updating us with breaking news from Jerusalem. Thank you for your input.
Thank you.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. The European Union today took a legal step towards imposing sanctions on Niger's new military rulers who overthrew the democratically elected leader in July. The 27-nation bloc has condemned the ouster of Niger's president, Mahamoud Bazoum, a key Western partner in the extremist-plagued region. The French news agency AFP says the EU announced it has adopted a legal framework under which it can now sanction individuals and entities responsible for actions that threaten the peace, stability, and security of Niger. The bloc's foreign policy chief said the move sends a clear message: military coups bear costs. The EU already has suspended security cooperation and financial support with Niger following the military takeover. The World Health Organization reports progress is being made in efforts to prevent and respond to cases of sexual misconduct by its staff, but acknowledges that such abuse remains problematic. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Over the past 12 months, the United Nations Office of Internal Oversight Services, or IOS, reports it has investigated 287 allegations of sexual misconduct. Approximately 83 are related to the 10th Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo, with 25% of that number pertaining to alleged abuse by WHO personnel. The UN opened a special investigative unit in November 2021, following a sex scandal involving UN personnel and others who responded to the deadly Ebola outbreak. IOS Director Lisa McClellan on Monday told reporters the report identifies 83 alleged perpetrators connected to that 2018-2020 mission in the DRC.
Since 2021, we have entered the names of 25 alleged perpetrators of sexual misconduct into the UN Clear Check database to prevent future employment within the UN system. Several have been dismissed, including five staff members related to findings of sexual misconduct during the period, and seven former personnel were informed that their actions would have led to termination had they still been in service.
The Director of Prevention and Response to Sexual Misconduct at WHO, Gaia Gamhawage, says the highest number of alleged sexual perpetrators are found in Africa and the Eastern Mediterranean. She says populations in these regions are highly vulnerable to abuse due to the high number of countries affected by health emergencies and humanitarian crises, with a large UN presence responding to the needs.
So we know sexual misconduct happens when there is a power differential, and that power differential is used for sexual exploitation. And this used to happen with impunity. But with the work we're doing, we are getting complaints and concerns raised. So I think we shouldn't expect numbers to go down anytime soon.
What is important, she says, is to have all allegations of misconduct exposed so the UN can assess and investigate them. She adds it is unlikely that this abhorrent behavior can be eradicated, so what WHO is looking for is to demonstrate zero tolerance. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa's administration recently announced it is preparing legislation to drastically limit numbers of foreign-born workers. The country is battling high unemployment, which is fueling anti-foreigner sentiment. Darren Taylor reports.
Migrants from other African countries have streamed into South Africa since 1994. That's when the African National Congress, the ANC, became the country's first democratically elected government, ending decades of apartheid. The ANC now says its policy of opening South Africa to the continent was wrong and that it should have enforced tougher immigration laws. It says there are 4 million foreign-born nationals living in the country, mostly from other African nations. Independent migration groups say the number is significantly higher. South Africa's Labour Department says it's setting quotas for the number of foreigners businesses are allowed to employ. Director of Public Employment at the department, Sam Morotoba, says companies and individuals who in the future give work to too many foreigners will be fined. However, the government hasn't yet specified what level of foreign employees would trigger fines. Morotoba points out that South Africa has one of the highest unemployment rates in the world at 35%. So he says local companies and individuals have an obligation to reserve employment for citizens.
What we are going to look at in the main sectors that are currently problematic, you know, the hospitality and tourism sector, the security, agriculture, construction. Those are some of the sectors where the prevalence of migrants, in some cases 100% employment, currently exists.
But a labor lawyer who regularly represents employed migrants, Pakamile Chlubi-Majola, told VOA the government's using foreigners as scapegoats.
What we are seeing, which it disturbs us greatly, is this narrative which seems to be strengthening that South Africa's unemployment is due to the fact that foreign nationals have stolen jobs. That is not true. The evidence does not back it up. The problems that people are experiencing right now have got nothing to do with foreign nationals. They've got everything to do with policy decisions that this government has taken and failure by this government to deliver services to our people.
Another lawyer, Gail Barrable, told VOA the new laws will mean businesses will start retrenching thousands of foreign-born workers in the coming months as the proposal is debated and, as expected, becomes law.
Where it might impact quite significantly is on employment of domestic workers, nannies, that sort of thing, because there are South Africans available with those skills. So to the extent that an employer could say, well, you know, I can't find a local, I think that's going to be difficult to sustain. So it may well impact private households.
With unemployment and crime rates high in South Africa, anti-foreigner sentiment has risen in the past few years, at times leading to violence against immigrants. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Tanzania, Kenya and Uganda have been chosen to host the Africa Cup of Nations or the AFCON tournament in 2027. It's a unique opportunity for these nations to raise both their profiles and tourist dollars. Charles Kombe reports from Dar es Salaam.
Abdallah Kibadeni has over 50 years of experience in sports, including playing on Tanzania's national football team. For him, Tanzania hosting the African Cup of Nations or AFCON tournament is a lifelong dream come true. He says now the chance has come. He's hoping that people come together and volunteer for what needs to be done, and the soccer players prepare well to ensure that they keep the trophy at home. Tanzania has two stadiums set aside for the tournament and wants to build a new stadium in Arusha to host the games. Sports officials say the other two AFCON host nations, Kenya and Uganda, also have plans underway. Boniface Wambura is the Tanzania Football Federation's Director of Legal Affairs, Information and Marketing. He says new stadiums will be constructed and some of the old stadiums need renovations to meet the standards necessary for hosting these competitions. But sports analyst Neema Mawenge say Tanzania has a lot of work ahead. She says the infrastructure is still not in good shape. The stadiums are there, even though they will undergo renovations, but they still have a low standard, Mawenge says. She thinks the most important thing is that the government, along with those in authority in the sports sector, should put in greater efforts. Officials say the countries should prepare now to get their stadiums and infrastructure ready for the 2027 games. The AFCON tournament is held every 2 years. It has been held in the Ivory Coast in early 2024 and Morocco in 2025. Charles Kombe, VOA News in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends? Breakout artists? New releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station.